Okay, good morning, folks. If we could settle in, we're about ready to start. I'm going to call this meeting to order. I believe we have a quorum. Is that correct, Caitlin?
Yes.
Okay, will you, Caitlin, go over the meeting procedures and do roll call?
Certainly. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you, AGB team Corey and Marvin, for helping us out today. If you're new to the facility, restrooms are down the hall to the left. We also have refreshments in the back, courtesy of the Bay Foundation. Help yourself. If you need to connect to Wi-Fi, the network is DRYC_clubhouse. And the password is capital P Palawan, P-A-L-A-W-A-N, 1108. This meeting is held in a hybrid format in which members and the public are participating both remotely and in person. At this time, we have three members joining us remotely. And if you need any IT support, connecting to or using Zoom, please email it@agpvideo.com. For those that would like to provide public comment today, if you're in person, please fill out the speaker card at the side of the room here, and you can hand that card to myself or Luke. And if you're participating via Zoom, you can raise your hand virtually when we reach the item that you'd like to speak. If you're calling in over the phone, please dial *9 to raise your hand and *6 to unmute yourself. This meeting is being recorded and live streamed, so please speak clearly. And for members joining us in person, please remember to turn your microphone on when you speak and turn off when you've finished. That's very important, so those joining us remotely can capture what you said. So that'll conclude meeting logistics. I recommend we move to roll call attendance for introductions. Okay.
Please do.
Just one moment while I share the roster. Okay, Sabrina Ashtian.
Present.
Thank you. Jonathan Bishop.
Here.
Cody Bridges.
Here.
Jacob Berman.
Here.
Charlie Casperi.
Here.
Tom Ford.
Here.
Dean Francois.
Here.
Jamie King joining us remotely.
Here.
Dan Murphy.
Here.
Jenny Newman.
Here.
Warren Ontiveros.
Present.
Aaron Ordower.
Present.
Catherine Peace.
Present.
Greg Rashal.
Here.
Bruce Resnick.
Here.
Susie Santelena.
Here.
Rory Skay. Clark Stevens.
Here. Good morning.
Martha Tremblay.
Present. Good morning.
Aaron Wilson-Olgan.
Present.
And Erica Yelensky.
Good morning. Here.
Did I miss any members? Okay. Well, that'll conclude roll call attendance of members. I recommend we move to item one for public comment.
Please do.
Okay, we received two requests in advance. The first from Walter Lamb joining us remotely, followed by Mitchell Lockman in person. Walter, give me one moment to share your slides, and we'll track your 4 minutes separately and let you know when you have about a minute left.
Thanks, Caitlin.
Sorry, one moment. Okay, your slides are loading. Okay, there we go. You have the floor, Walter.
All right, thanks, Caitlin. Hey, good morning, everyone. Walter Lamb representing the Binding Wetlands Land Trust. This is my only slide this morning. I'm just going to leave it up as I talk about a few things. But this was an event that our organization coordinated on July 9th and in Area A of the Binding Wetlands Ecological Reserve. And I think, I could be wrong, someone feel free to correct me, that this is the first event, habitat restoration event in Area A that involved a nonprofit, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and an outside volunteer group. And I just want to say it went really, really well. You can see in the background, there's some alkali heath. That's a wetland facultative plant that we were able to clear away some non-native invasive vegetation from. And our hope is that this type of thing becomes the norm and really sort of the new direction at Biona. I know that There's been a lot of stuff going on for many decades now. There's been a lot of acrimony. You know, I think that's because a lot of people care really passionately about this really important ecological reserve. But I think at this point, there's so much common ground in terms of, you know, things that need to happen right now, regardless of how folks may or may feel about the large scale restoration, which I'll talk about in just a little bit. So just wanted the four women in the foreground, two of those are our college interns, the other two our field trip coordinator and a board member who also does a lot of educational outreach for us, Gabrielle Crow. The down in the lower left is all the 20 volunteers, and also, you know, staff from CDFW and our organization. So really want to say that we appreciate the CDFW doing this with us, and the person that was the field staff, you know, just incredibly well prepared, courteous, knowledgeable, you know, everything, just a great reflection on CDFW. Now, that obviously doesn't, you know, resolve all the other issues that we have. And one of those issues is with the large scale restoration project. Appreciated the candid presentation in June. Obviously, it's a complex topic, not enough time to talk about everything. But I think the biggest issue is the way that ended, right? Which is that sort of the discussion about what the commission's policies might be got curtailed a little bit towards the end. And I think that's not really the way this commission's supposed to function. I think you are actually supposed to, based on your legislative mandate, you know, take a look at something like the large scale restoration project and assess whether or not it's actually still viable at this point. It really doesn't to us look like it is for a lot of different reasons. And if not, you know, again, that would then tend to focus on what else can we do, and, you know, maybe a little bit more additional focus on this near-term stewardship, as well as things like access, educational programming, and that sort of thing. Just want to just real quick on that note. I think one of the things that was mentioned at the last meeting was that because the cost of the full project is so large, possibly double what it was once thought, that even that lower range was, you know,
1 minute, Walter.
Was that 1 minute?
Yes.
Okay. Pretty insurmountable that maybe that what would get attempted first is just to do a couple of sequences. And I think that needs to be discussed because we're looking at those couple of sequences. We think, A, they don't really accomplish the core goals of the project. That's the first thing. And I think the second thing is we don't think that can be done either, right, without an EIS and federal environmental impact statement. So I do hope that there will be continued discussion. I know that there was discussion of a field trip at one point. I don't know when that might get scheduled. But again, we're feeling good about moving forward in a positive way. Definitely need this commission's help to stay involved and to figure out, you know, where we go from here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Walter.
The next speaker we have is Mitchell Lockman. And we'll screen share your timer for 4 minutes so you can keep track of that. Just give us one moment, please.
So I ran into Senator Van Allen a few days ago. We have this marine habitat kelp growing plan going before us. Well, the chairman, when I was here the first time, was asking him to release money so the program can get going. So when I ran into him a few days ago, I said, how come you're not releasing the money about the kelp growing thing? He was oblivious to it. So I'm going to ask you when he does show up to ask him again for money to get the program going. I'm telling you, I had to inform him about it, where the kids are growing kelp. He loved that, and he started lightening up. The other issue is, you know, I spoke last time. I started thinking about what do other areas do that don't have a convenience of dumping the waste, human wastewater, into the ocean, rivers. Well, you know, there's lots of areas. And I just hit the tip of the iceberg. The first place I came to was Palm Springs. And then there's the Coachella Valley wastewater treatment plant. Cities right outside of Los Angeles. They're doing percolating ponds, and you can't do it here because you need the certain kind of filtrations, the depth of the soil where the wastewater goes into the, it gets filtered. So You know, on the extreme, so I'm looking at how we can benefit, in a more, you know, recyclable way with our wastewater. Because this Hyperion plant, they try to do a good job. We appreciate their work, but the pipe going out in the ocean leaks. The fish are cancerous. The water is brown tide. The seals are dying. And we're next. That's our life system. This is L.A. is around the bay. So, you know, just on the extreme, you know, I just look on the computer, and I've only hit a few areas. It's a big world. They don't all live around the ocean. And it seems like what I have hit on is they most often is percolating ponds. Saudi Arabia trucks it out into the desert and into a percolating pond in a system. Israel is supposed to be the most efficient in this in the world in percolating ponds. So I think you need to do research. I think you need to do a world study. You know, you just hit on the computers and call these areas. What are you guys doing? Well, one of them in Southeast Asia, the countries, I don't know, one country, I looked it up. It's called resilience. They actually have aquaculture. You just got to look at this stuff. It's called Resilience Wastewater, Urban Fish Ponds, Low-Tech Sewage. And also, I looked on the Santa Cruz Sentinel. They're going with, what are they going with here? Compost toilets, where the bacteria, you know, breaks it down. This is sort of like percolating ponds. So later on, I mean, you guys should do a study on what's going on. I was doing it. I think some of you guys are appointed.
Thank you, Mitchell.
But you haven't got into it and really, really done the research about what's going on. We're dealing with
that's
Hyperion
all the time
plan.
Today, Mitchell.
Thank you.
Caitlin, do we have anyone else for public comment?
No, we do not.
Thank you. So moving on to the order of the agenda, staff doesn't propose any changes. Are there any changes by commission members? Seeing none, we'll stick with the order of the agenda. Next up is the report from the chair. The July executive committee meeting was canceled due to a lack of quorum, and I worked with the commission staff to set the agenda as our procedures. Luke, report from the Technical Advisory Committee.
There has not been a Technical Advisory Committee since the last meeting, so there are no updates. But we are working on scheduling a fall Technical Advisory Committee meeting. So we do not have the details on that yet, but we will get that information posted as soon as we can.
Okay. Next, Tom, a report from the NEP.
Thank you, John. Wanted to take us from the national level on down to local work involving the National Estuary Program. Seen support in both the House and the Senate to keep the funding for this program across those 28 programs, staying from Maine down the eastern seaboard into Puerto Rico, through the Gulf, and up the West Coast at a flat level from last year. So that's very encouraging news in an election year. And with, I know that maybe February and March seems like a long time in the past, but if you recall, we've got some very interesting budget processes that the federal government's been undertaking this year. So we'll see where this all comes out, but right now we're, I think, cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to keep the lights on and keep this program running to the extent that those federal funds allow. We have our upcoming fall tech transfer meeting in Long Island this year. So those various NEP programs get together, look at some of our best practices, share what we might find as best as lessons learned. And the exciting part in this case is rather than maybe focused on a single program, we'll be working at looking at three different NEPs, one that works in the New York, New Jersey harbor area, one that works in Long Island Sound. And for those of you that are familiar with Long Island, it has that lobster claw sort of look at the end. That is the Peconic Bay. So some very different geographies, different communities of folks organized around there, certainly different uses for those waterways. So I think it'll be a very interesting conference. That's in November. So I'll have more to share on the tail end of that. This is the time of year where we start leaning in to get ready for our annual reporting, the federal fiscal year, closing out end of September. So we'll be starting to populate our NEPORT reporting tool, our annual report for the EPA, and once their review of that and approval, certainly share it with all of you. And I think it does do a wonderful job highlighting all of the contributions from the many agencies and entities around this table that do so much to improve the water quality and protect and promote the habitats and their uses here off of our coast. Then, getting a little closer to home and a little bit into the work that we've been up to. So eelgrass. So this, again, is a vascular plant. It's got roots, flowers, shoots, all that stuff. But it grows underwater, which I don't ever get tired of telling people because I think they go, wow, I didn't know that was possible. And we get to scuba dive over these beautiful beds and meadows. Historical evidence suggests that there was a lot more of it, maybe not so much more so than in my lifetime. And we've been experimenting, developing methods to figure out how we can meaningfully and effectively start to restore it. So we've had some great success off of Catalina Island, 3 years of watching this transplant site grow and improve and get larger and larger. And if I could have found it in my computer, I would have shared with you the picture of the green sea turtle laying on the bottom with one of the cameras that we have deployed out there. So when we're not simply swimming around out there and making our observations on our scuba gear, we're increasingly using remote cameras and other sensors and technologies to help us assess what's going on. So more to come on that, but things looking really good, and we've got some great research interests coming in from Scripps Institution of Oceanography to aid us in this work. If you want to have some more conversations about eelgrass, I'll be always happy to speak with you. As for our kelp forest restoration work, we're a little bit over 62 acres of this effort at this point in time, largest effort of its kind in the Western Hemisphere. Things continue to go great, and after 10 years now of data looking at the resilience of those investments, I think the answer is that we've got kelp forests where we once had persistent urchin barrens. I think the science is now, you know, sort of taking its time. We're there. So with increasing confidence, we're saying that this is a very effective method to help protect and promote a very biologically diverse and productive habitat in the kelp forests off of our coast, which have numerous recreational, commercial, cultural values. Somebody was talking about my tan. I was 3 days out there on the water in Santa Barbara over this weekend, in the early part of this week, aiding the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, State of California, and others. And we put 5,000 abalone out on the bottom of the ocean floor. Those techniques that we're working with have been in development in part because of the investments and interests of this body for the past 15 years. And so in this case, some of the presumed harms from the Refugio oil spill, this is an opportunity for us to try to do some restoration work to try to get that back. So it was really neat watching, you know, two dives. Each one of them took about 40 minutes and like, oh, wow, we got it done. But after 15 years of hard work. So reminded me that there's a lot of prep work and lead up to these efforts, but very pleased to see us successfully doing that work up there. A little closer to shore and onshore, as many of you know, we've been long involved in restoring or establishing vegetated sand dunes off of our coast. Those plants are able to capture sand. The sand starts to bury the plants grow up out of them, and over time this little race goes on. And we've had dune formation off of Santa Monica that's resulted in about a meter plus of sand accumulation over the past 9 years. The big part of the question was, how would the public respond to having this sort of park-like looking landscape on a beach that's typically been sandy and maybe just sand? So the exciting part is, I think we've now tried this in Santa Monica, we've got it in Manhattan, we've got it up in Malibu. Everywhere we're going, folks are really jazzed to see it. The wildlife has responded beautifully well. We've got a second project now in the works in Santa Monica for an expanse of about 5 acres. And we just recently received support from the Venice Neighborhood Council to start working on a project off of Venice Beach as well. Thank you, Beaches and Harbors, State Parks, everybody that leans into this to help us out. I think we're off to a great start here to try to figure out how to add to our beaches and have them there to be resilient in the face of coastal erosion and flooding from sea level rise and climate change. Trying to keep things clean as well out there. And this was a project that I'm just so proud of our team on this, from initial outreach to engagement to working out grant agreements in aiding the city of Los Angeles and local restaurants in how to get off of single-use disposable plastics and support them through converting their restaurants if they need dishwashing abilities, helping them pick out all of the durable goods that this grant program would provide, and did over 100 food service establishments in the past year and a half. We'll have more specifics for this for you coming up. The part that I really hit me in my heart was one of the restaurateurs going like, and now I have this beautiful serviceware in my restaurant, and instead of giving somebody like a styrofoam clamshell and they just take it home, or they sit here in my restaurant and eat out of this clamshell, now they're like, holy crow, look at this, right? Like, folks coming back to our restaurant because it feels like it's a night out and it's a little fancy. It's definitely an upgrade from where they've been. So just wonderful to see that. I know we've got more on the agenda later, so I'll zip it in case I start stepping on other folks' toes. As for our work with the boating community, surrounded by them pretty thoroughly right now, distributed just under 3,000 clean boater kits. So this is information, resources, and supplies to aid boaters in making sure that they're using the right products on their boats, that they're aware of the regulations that limit the discharge of their bilge or their sewage, and also giving them other opportunities to figure out how to manage that. I shared with Mr. Lockman that marine composting toilets are certainly catching on, and we're going to hopefully get some support to further that work in the coming years and bring some more awareness for the functionality and convenience of those. And perhaps last thing I wanted to share is that we've also been really, this same team that's been doing this engagement with the boating community, using a lot of social media, getting folks out there, hearing from them, a lot of surveys, a lot of interaction that have enabled us to work with that diverse community up and down the state of California, and setting some national sort of interest in how to get this work done. So we might be supporting the state of Florida, who has a tremendously large recreational boating community, in their efforts to do this as well. I think that's what I have for you today. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
John.
Thank you. Tom, you briefly mentioned
There you go, Charlie.
Thank you. You briefly mentioned sea level rise adaptation strategies, and has there been any formal recognition, to your knowledge, of kelp forests reducing wave intensity and resultant erosion of the shoreline? Is there a formal recognition of that activity, to your knowledge?
I can send you the peer-reviewed journal publications that we were able to contribute to here with our kelp forest restoration project to get exactly at that question. There is some reduction of wave energy as it moves through the kelp forest, but that really only impacts small waves, local sort of wind chop. The bigger, longer ocean swells come rolling through there with little energy loss. For me, the two things that we could yet better understand from a scientific standpoint is how much sediment actually settles out as the water moves through the kelp forest, because it does slow the currents that move sideways through there, and the additional benefits to the nearshore environment of all that kelp piling up. We've looked at that from a biodiversity community standpoint and rocky intertidal systems, healthy kelp offshore, very healthy, happy tide pools inshore. We really haven't done that work on other coastline types. So I think that's the other place that it might play in.
Thank you.
But I'll shoot that stuff to you, Charlie.
Any other questions for Tom?
Yeah, kind of a follow-on for, you know, existing or potential study. Relationship of kelp forest growth die-off to drought. You know, is there any relationship in the pattern of, you know, because of nutrient and again, related to sediment, you know, in those big flow years, you know, is more kept local at those river mouths?
And Clark, I know you're a systems thinker. We've had that opportunity to work all these years. In some cases, right, proximity to a river mouth with nutrients coming down through the watershed helps kelp persist in the summertime where nutrients can often be limiting. In other cases, that's an overabundance of nutrients, and then the plankton start to shade out the macroalgae below. So there's no straightforward linear relationship to look at. I think there's a few positive feedback loops to pay attention to. Oftentimes, I would say in our region, when we have less rain, we've got more kelp early in the year because there's not as much sediment in the system. I think the light gets down, just me thinking. More work to do there. But then in rainy years, we see the kelp persisting longer in the summer, I think, because of that flux of nutrients into our coastal ocean. So more to learn about that. Appreciate the question.
Any other questions for Tom?
Chair, I just wanted to announce for the record that we had some members join us after we did roll call. So we have Genevieve Osmena from LA County Public Works, Megan Cooper from State Coastal Conservancy, and Tina Oh from LA City Tourism Department.
Thank you, Caitlin. Okay, we're going to move on to reports from members on implementation of the Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan. I'd like to take this opportunity to invite a long-time commission member, Lori Newman, to make some comments.
Microphone. Caitlin has a letter that I've written to you all that she's passing out, but I'm going to read it into the record as well. I'm going to preface it before I read it with one other thing, because I think you all would be surprised. I'm sitting next to Tom Ford. I hired him many years ago, and we've worked together. I had to write this letter because he will not return my phone calls. So I'm shaking, I'm nervous, but I'm going to read it. Dear members of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, I am here today to say goodbye. On July 20th, 2024, I submitted my letter of resignation to the board of the Bay Foundation. With that resignation, I no longer can serve on this commission. I want to take this opportunity, and this is the most important thing to me, to thank you all for the work that you've been doing and you're going to continue to do. All the commission, at the commission meeting on June 20th, I think many of you are here, I was on Zoom, I spoke and I shared my concerns about the restoration of the Bayona wetlands, including funding issues and environmental. The following day, I was asked by the Bay Foundation's attorney, who's not here today, to apologize for what I had said at that meeting. upon reflection of the Bay Foundation's request, I apologized via email on July 22nd, 2024. After making that apology, I had a number of questions regarding what I had said, my testimony. I proceeded to view the recording of that June meeting. I attempted to contact several board members and staff members, some at this table, but I was unable to do so. I felt completely disrespected and disregarded, and I had to make the decision to resign. While some of my comments on June 20th, 2024 could have been conveyed differently, what I expressed came from a place of commitment to the Santa Monica Bay. Throughout my participation on the Bay Foundation Board and at this commission, I have endeavored to ensure the Bay's continued improvement and survival. Excuse me. In closing, I reiterate my appreciation for the work you do to restore Santa Monica Bay. I take great pleasure and pride in helping create this organization, which, as you can see, I did many years ago. And I'm going to miss being here, but it's time. So thank you all so very much.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
I would like to take this opportunity as the chair to thank you for all the years that you've worked on helping the Center for Bay. Thank you.
Thank you for saying that, John. Appreciate it.
Are there any other members who have comments at this point?
Thank you. Aaron Wardera on behalf of Supervisor Lindsay Horvath. I just also wanted to, on behalf of the supervisor, it's a hard message to hear, Lori. We, on behalf of the supervisor, very much appreciate your leadership in creating this this body from the start, from your work with Senator Kuehl, with the Bay Foundation, for the commission, and just as a community leader, and even in our office in the last 2 years, and coming in and helping us dream about how to be good stewards of the coastline. So, Lori, thank you very much for all you've done.
Thank you.
All right, any other reports from members? Oh, yeah, Dean.
Thank you. Since we're still on informational items, earlier you reported that we had a lack of quorum on the executive committee. I was just wondering, I don't know who or why we're not able to make it, but if there was a possibility to poll the members or something to see whether we could move it to the mornings instead of the afternoons, and it would be consistent hours with when this commission meets, or whether there was some possibility to do that.
So I will work with staff to see if that would help in the future. We always have a close to quorum issue with the executive committee, but up until this one, we've been able to make it. But
okay,
it's a good suggestion, Dean.
Thank you.
Yes.
I would just say that one thing, Dean, that was done recently is we were asked to add another alternate, those of us on the executive committee. So Luke and Caitlin reached out about that, and we've done that. So in the unlikely event that, you know, we've got to get one out of three and in those situations. But yeah, I think it was unusual.
Right. I mean, some of us have different ways to appoint alternates. It's not always as easy, right? I mean, I can't just pick someone. I know it has to go through this process. So yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any other reports from board members? Seeing none. Oh.
Thank you. Just wanted to report from Heal the Bay that we're excited to be continuing our role as LA County Coordinator for Coastal Cleanup Day. We're actively planning. We've trained a lot of site captains already. And I know the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission staff will be involved, so I'm excited about that. And maybe they can speak more to that. But I just wanted to also let people know that our site is live, our website is live for registration for Coastal Cleanup Day. So it's on September 21st. So I encourage you all to, get involved yourselves as well as share with your networks. Registration is open for sites. And then we also still have two trainings left for site captains. So if anyone wants to take on a specific site themselves, we'll have two trainings. And those are on Heal the Bay's website on August 21st and September 3rd. And those are both virtual trainings. And then I also wanted to share that Heal the Bay, in partnership with Sea Grant, Scripps, SCOOS, and Sacred Places Institute, are actively planning for our second DDT community meeting. So this is a meeting that focuses on the research that's being conducted for the ocean dumping of the deep ocean dumping of DDT. So that will be on October 25th. So I just encourage you all to save that date. It's in the afternoon, 1:30 to 3:30 on October 25th. It will be a hybrid meeting. So there's in person at USC, and then or you could join virtually. And registration will be live soon for that. And I'll share more information as it comes out. Thank you.
Any other reports from members? Seeing none, we'll move on to adoption of the minutes. I understand there's a couple of changes. Luke, could you go over those proposed changes?
Yes, we have two proposed changes to the minutes. Caitlin will share the minutes on the screen. Could we get the text on the left side of the screen increased in size, please? Thanks. So the first change, if folks have the minutes with them, they can follow along. This appears on page 6. Lori reached out to us prior to the meeting through email and requested the change you see on the screens in front of you. Lori asked to be have her name attached to her comments in the minutes there, so we made that change. The next change, this was at the request of Dean this morning. Dean wanted his comment at the last meeting here recharacterized, so Dean wanted us to have it reflected in the minutes that he inquired as to why there was no deliberations at the end of the comments regarding the Biona Wetlands Restoration Project presentation. So those are the only changes we have so far.
Yes, Lord.
I did not suggest that language. Just so you know, I didn't suggest the language you put in. I asked you to amend the minutes and to change it. Maybe you could have showed it to me, because it's not what I would have wanted. And the reason I asked to be in the minutes, Commission, just so you know, I'm not trying to take up your time, there was everyone listed who spoke and what they said. My name was nowhere in the agenda, in the minutes. So I would like to suggest the language. I will send it to you.
Lori, if you have a...
I just want to say I made comments like it said for everybody else. I don't have the minutes here, but just do it in the same form. Like you have all those names, just do the same thing kind of.
I apologize if I had misinterpreted something from our email exchange. I thought you had specifically asked me to add your name to these comments, which is what I did. You could see that the edit is minimal, and it's a matter of just adding your name to the comments that were already there. But if you'd like to make changes, we have an opportunity to do that right now.
I'm not prepared. I don't have the minutes in front of me, and I don't want to take the commission's time.
So I'm going to suggest that we postpone the minutes till the next meeting. There's no reason that we needed to vote on them today. No one was trying to be disrespectful, Lori. They were just trying to abide by that. And so if you can work with Luke and Caitlin to get the representative, and we'll agendize this for the next meeting.
Thank you. I'll send it in later today.
Great. Thank you. So given that, we're going to postpone the adoption of the minutes so that we can reflect comments accurately. And unless there are any other proposed changes, this is a great time to tell us that we didn't reflect your comments or the minutes weren't reflected correctly, and work with Caitlin and Luke before the next meeting to get them modified. Okay. Given that, we will move on to our information items. Luke, I think you're going to introduce the first one.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So in 2018, LA County voters passed Measure W, which created the Safe Clean Water Program. The program provides local dedicated funding for projects that increases the region's water supply, improves water quality, enhances communities, and protects public health. Implementation of the Safe Clean Water Program is Action 43 of the Commission's Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan, or CCMP. And due to the multi-benefit approach of the Safe Clean Water Program, it actually helps meet the goals of other CCMP actions as well. Therefore, it's important for the Commission to engage with the Safe Clean Water Program as much as possible. And as you will learn during this informational item, this is a particularly good time for the Commission to engage with the program. You will now hear from LA Waterkeeper Executive Director and Governing Board Member Bruce Resnick. And is Maggie going to be joining? Okay. Bruce will share some of LA Waterkeeper's recommendations for improving the Safe Clean Water Program, as well as some ideas for how the Commission can support. So I will hand it over to Bruce now.
Thank you. It's nice to see a lot of friendly faces. It's been a while since I've been to a commission meeting. I know I've been represented ably by all alternates, but it's nice to get back here. I am going to, cite what the often attributed quote to Mark Twain. I would have written a shorter PowerPoint if I had more time. This is from a longer presentation that I was meaning to cut down a little, so I'm going to run through as well as I can, as quickly as I can, but definitely want to leave a lot of room for Q&A at the end. And as Luke mentioned, and was stealing the thunder from my first couple slides, you're really going to talk about the Safe Clean Water Program. You know, in general, we have some other folks around the table that are very expert as well. What's working with the program, what isn't, what is going on now, which I think provides a real unique opportunity for SMBRC to engage both as a body, but also individual members, and then how exactly we think that can and should happen. Next slide. Just a little bit of the bona fides slide with Safe Clean Water. I've probably been around and seen Safe Clean Water Program from different angles as much or more than anybody. I was part of the team with Our Water LA that was sort of the NGO side that helped negotiate Measure W once it got put on the ballot. I was participating in the campaign, doing a lot of speaker bureaus. I think we may have been the first NGO to actually donate to the campaign. My punishment for that was becoming an insider and helping implement Safe Clean Water Program as the first person that was actually put on two committees, chair of the scoring committee initially by Supervisor Kuehl and renewed by Supervisor Horvath, and want to express my appreciation there, Chair Horvath, and also on the Central Santa Monica Bay Watershed Committee, which is where the funding gets decided and our esteemed chair is sitting right across from me and Susie. We've also done a lot of work continuing to kind of push from the outside as our water LA on trying to get the program to work better, assess its performance, and currently pushing for adaptive management of the program. Next slide. So where we are, next slide. Sorry, I got a few of those breaks. So we've heard a little bit already about safe, clean water, and a lot of folks know, but there's actually 14 overarching goals of the program, the $280 million a year in perpetuity, got about 70% of the vote, but really three overarching: water quality, water supply, and community investment benefits, which is largely aligned with nature-based solutions, with a big focus on investing in disadvantaged communities. We mostly talk about the regional program, which is the 50% of the competitive grant, and that's most of my presentation. But 40% of that $280 million goes back to local returns, so municipalities, and the district maintains 10% to administer the program, but also to undertake some of the other activities, including things like launching a community engagement program, education, and workforce development. Funding from the Safe Clean Water can fund not only the construction, but operations and maintenance, which is really, really critical, and a lot of bond funding does not allow that. Technical resource program, so folks that have projects that aren't ready yet for prime time can get funding to kind of get it to there. Scientific studies, I also mentioned the programs already. And also I should mention watershed coordinators, which are a really critical element to help these watershed committees and help identify and foster good projects. And the structures, there's a scoring committee, which I chair, a small committee of six people that score every project. So I have reviewed every project. The regional oversight committee, which is kind of the independent, you know, auditor, and the nine watershed committees, which is who actually makes the funding decisions, albeit needs to be then approved by the regional oversight committee. That's actually happening now, as well as the board of supervisors. It just happened. Next slide. So as Luke mentioned, this does tie very closely to the CCMP, both directly implement the Countywide Safe Clean Water Program, and I'm not going to read everything. It's a large slide, and we obviously will share this with folks. Next slide. But also sort of, you know, inherent within that is trying to move forward EWIMPs, Enhanced Watershed Management Plans, TMDL compliance, something I am very passionate about, Action 28, support efforts of disadvantaged communities to achieve healthy habitats and green infrastructure, and then also some of the research components. And again, I will reiterate, there is funding for scientific studies. So if the commission ever had things related to stormwater, this would be a great place to apply for funding. Next slide. So celebrating success of the program, and I really, you know, a lot of the next talk is the adaptive management, where could we be doing better? But I think it is really, really, really critical to celebrate the success. And I have to admit, as somebody who's been very, very involved in the program and feels a lot of ownership, I feel like I'm equipped to criticize the program because I feel a lot of ownership and being part of it. I get very defensive when other people do, because this is one of the most incredibly complex programs. The structure I mentioned, the fact that it tries to be multi-benefit. We had to get 180 some odd people appointed to all these different boards. A lot of this in the early days was done through COVID, and we never missed a round of funding. We're actually on a little bit of a pause now, which I'll get to. After the fifth round, we're having invested $1 billion worth of programs. A lot of these statistics, by the way, we did an assessment after round three, and they're a little bit outdated, but we identified 20-plus multi-benefit exemplars. That was after round three. I'm sure we're at least 30 that really bring a lot of that disadvantaged community, greening, multi-benefit, captured up to 50,000 acre-feet for new water, enough for 500,000 residents. Stormwater, we're getting greening. So there is a lot to celebrate, and all those dots are where we have projects. So you can see sort of the countywide distribution, which is one of the goals. Next slide. So what are the watersheds that relate specifically, or the WASCs, as we refer to it, that relate specifically to Santa Monica Bay? And it's really broken into three, because we have North, South, and Central. Or you can kind of think about it as Malibu Creek. It's not a perfect overlay, but Malibu Creek Watershed, Biona, and Dominguez Channel. And so South Santa Monica Bay, and again, this is just the regional pot of funding, gets about $17 million a year. Chair Craig, who I'm sure many of us know from Surf Rider, And as I mentioned, there's watershed coordinators for each of these watersheds. This one is headed by somebody at Heal the Bay. I think we've probably heard of Heal the Bay, most of us, I would hope. And so it's $17 million a year in the regional program. You can allocate funding over five-year cycles. So they've already allocated $127 million. You can see a nice distribution of projects. We have about $29 million left over through 28-29. But again, every year, $17 million gets matched with that. So really getting on, 46 million, plus the local returns. And this just is an example of the kind of projects. Next slide. Example one, and just have a few from each of the WAS, or one or two for each of the WAS. Very typical project, green infrastructure, green street project, diverts water for irrigation and treatment. This is an LA San project. Next slide, our LA sanitation. One of the things I like about this, I won't read because you can see the deck in front of you, but I like the green street elements, 50 new street trees. We know how short we are and how many areas we have that suffer from extreme heat, 1,000 linear feet of bioswale, addresses flooding complaints, which is one of those community benefits. This was awarded $10.3 million out of an $11.8 million. And, that's kind of probably even a little bit on the smaller side for a lot of the projects funded. Next slide. Central Santa Monica Bay WASC. This is where I serve as well. And again, Heal the Bay is one of the two. Because Central Santa Monica Bay is a little bit bigger, we actually have two watershed coordinators, which is one, Upper LA River's got three, we have two. But similar funding size, about $17 million a year. We've been a little bit more cautious with our money, so we've only allocated 116, which means we have about $39 million left for the 28-29, but again, every year, $17 million gets added to that. So, getting close to $50 million. And you see a nice distribution of projects there. Next slide. And picked a couple examples from this. I know this area better. This is a green, this is a very common type of project, taking an existing park, rehabilitating, doing underground stormwater. Edward Vincent Jr. Park in Inglewood. This started as a TRP, which I was very excited. It sort of shows that proof of concept of getting funding to get a project to the level where they can apply. A good partnership between multiple different agencies and cities. Next slide. It's also a very big project, so it's still very early. You got $4.3 million for design for this project after the TRP, and it's going to be a fairly large-scale project. But it's overall going to be about $46, $47 million project. That might be pre-inflationary numbers, so I'm still going to need to find a lot of future funding for that. Next slide. Biona Creek TMDL, this is a different kind of project, a very traditional, more sort of very water quality compliance, low flow diversion, fairly gray infrastructure. They did add some trees and other things, but it is probably one of the most important TMDL compliance EWIMP type projects. Probably hear from my voice, I tend to favor more of the nature-based solutions, but this is a very, very critical stormwater pollution and, like I said, compliance project. Next slide. You can see it's a fairly large project. It's going to treat a drainage area of about 70,000 acres. Very expensive project. So we've got $22 million allocated, but the total project cost is $77, and I know the city's working really, really hard to find the rest of that money. Next slide. North Santa Monica Bay, much smaller, because the amount of funding is how much hardscape, there's actually a lot of green space in North Santa Monica Bay, so not a lot of hardscape. So it's a tenth the size. Their watershed coordinator is only half time, although I think she probably works more than half time because I get a lot of her emails. And they've had a hard time finding projects. And this speaks to one of the challenges, which is the one size fits all per watershed is really, really difficult when all the watersheds have very, very different needs. And even sub watersheds have very, very different needs. So I guess the good news is they keep banking all that money they have available, but we need to find projects that kind of fit within the criteria of safe, clean water. Next slide. Because I know I'm behind, I'm just gonna be really quick. The one project we did highlight, again, a very traditional sort of green street project, bioretention swales, you know, porous pavement, all that. Nice, you know, it's a good project, but they have been having a hard time finding projects. Next slide. And again, this is, you know, fairly small, and the funding is right now just at the design phase. Next slide. And one thing I'll just mention quickly on the three Central Samoc, if you add them up, you know, 17 plus 17 plus 2, you're 30 some odd. If you start, you know, then adding it with the local return, it's a lot of money for projects that we can be investing as smartly as we can in the Santa Monica Bay. So where is the program falling short? I won't read the whole list, but, you know, I guess the we'll see in the next couple slides, a lot of the projects that are moving forward came from the EWIMS. They're very compliance focused. And really, we're trying to sort of add on multi-benefits, but we're really not getting the kind of multi-benefits we need, particularly around greening and water supply. And some of it is the scoring criteria really forces applicants to kind of chase points rather than optimize benefits. We never set clear targets, so it's hard to even evaluate. How are we doing on greening? We don't have a target, so I don't know. We look at project by project, so we don't understand how they interact with one another. If you're capturing stormwater upstream and then downstream, you can only capture that once, and we don't really look at that. Some of what I would consider very good community-based projects don't get through or are not applying because, again, they don't quite fit the criteria. It is a very, very hard application process. The vast majority of funding, the most successful, are very large agencies, city, county. Metro's only put forward a couple but have been successful. Very hard for nonprofits or smaller entities, smaller communities to get through. In this kind of looking at project by project, we may not be leveraging funding as well as we can. Next slide. Oh, actually, keep this up for 1 second. I'll get to it later, but the reason I have this picture up is the park where I was actually at Riverfest this last weekend. Los Angeles State Park is about 30 acres. You can kind of see it in relation to Dodger Stadium. Through round three, that's about as much hardscape as we've removed. It's now somewhere over 40, but I'll get to why that isn't a huge amount in LA in a couple slides. Okay, next slide, and I'm definitely running behind, so I'll go fairly quickly. Just, I already mentioned our study showed we're getting fewer applications from like 60, 50, 40, 30, 20. Projects are getting smaller, cost share is getting smaller. It shows we kind of cleared a backlog of projects, but we're kind of at that point of like, where do we go next? Next slide. We also see some clear winners and losers. At the bottom, a lot of existing park rehabilitation. Again, it makes sense. We went for low-hanging fruit. Take an existing park, rehabilitate it, because a lot of our parks need rehabilitation, put stormwater under it. Great. Like, those are great early projects. But what we're not seeing is a lot of new green space, new parks, and that's at the upper end. Greening schools, particularly LAUSD, has not been able to get a single of their 10 applications funded. And so we need to think about a better way to get some of that new green space. Next slide. And the reason that's important, and this is from the County Park Needs Assessment, is in LA County, we have about 2.6 million acres, about a third hardscape, a little more than a third, so 800,000 to a million acres. So, you know, we've done 40 of replacing hardscape. If you look at the county, our county sustainability plan, we would need to get 12,000 acres of new green space just to get to park communities to regional average of 3.3 acres per 100,000. And if you look at that bar chart, we have about half of our population is only about 1 acre per 100,000 residents. Even that 3.3, best practice is considered about 11 to 13 acres. So we have a lot to go for greening, which is why we need to focus on that. Next slide. Okay, re-envisioning safe, clean water. I'm going to have to fly through a lot of this, but next slide. Okay, I'll be fine. So just for context, the reason this is an interesting time is the Regional Oversight Committee finally prepared their first sort of audit of the program. It's called the Biennial Report, where they looked at how is it performing, how is it not performing. At the same time, Mark Pestrella, head of Flood Control District, and about 30 other titles, which I'm not going to name all of them, chief engineer, many, many others. issued his own sort of assessment of the program, and the County Board of Supervisors then adopted these at a public hearing and adopted some motions. And there's actually really broad agreement of some of these shortcomings, that we need a more proactive approach. We need more strategic investments of funding. We need those clear targets to measure against. We need to focus on those areas like greening and water supply and making sure that disadvantaged communities are getting fair share, more certainty of the benefits, and more community engagement. But there's also a lot of different interpretations of what some of these things mean. And one thing I will just mention in sort of the goal setting part of it is NRDC, Heal the Bay, and LA Waterkeeper, we put out our own Vision 2045 report, which laid out what we think could be goals for safe, clean water. Next slide. So one of the really good things is there's actually a lot of agreement from the ROC and the County Board and Flood Control, and this is where the NGOs, is that we really need to be moving more toward a watershed planning approach. So thinking less about the Safe Clean Water Program as maybe a traditional reactive grants program, but actually trying to be proactive. So starting with setting countywide targets, breaking those into watershed goals and targets, and then even potentially getting down to identifying projects or project types. That poses some challenges I'll get to. And then this is kind of LA Waterkeeper's approach. Some of it, I think, is in agreement or aligned with where the county is. Some maybe not. But one of the things that I'd like to see is the WASCs actually developing longer-term investment strategies of where they wanted to go into funding. So next slide. No worries. So the first step is setting countywide targets. Some of this was done at the ROC. The only actual specific number that they put is 300,000 acre feet of new stormwater capture capacity, which is a huge amount. Mostly what they said is we actually want to have the watershed planning and have the WASC come back to us with what they think realistic targets are, but the watershed planning effort is still ongoing at the Regional Oversight Committee. They are working on setting priorities, setting criteria. What are going to be the metrics that we're going to use to evaluate? So that's a process that is ongoing at the ROC currently, and I think hopefully we'll wrap up in the next month or two. Next slide. This is now getting down to the watershed level. And my next two slides kind of overlap a lot, so just forgive me on that. I'll clean it up for the next presentation. But this is also where we are now, is each of the WASCs, each of those watershed committees, is starting to undertake watershed planning. And there's outside consultants. They're also getting support from the watershed coordinators. And it started with setting what are the priorities for each WASC. So I'm in Central Santa Monica Bay. I pushed for floodplain reclamation along Biona Creek and green schools and, you know, greening particularly in South LA, which is, the area, in the WASC that really needs the most green space. But all of the different WASCs are doing that. And then the next step is that we're doing at the WASC is also helping to identify what resources are out there, what community engagement needs to happen, and then actually starting to set not only what are the priorities, but what are the targets that we want to achieve? How many green schools? What does it mean if we want to prioritize floodplain reclamation along Biona? Is that 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles? So that's what's ongoing right now at the WASCs. Next slide. And then this is where I want to go next, which is really identifying projects so we can move proactive. I admit my approach is a very radical departure. I don't think we'll get to my approach for a number of reasons, but I think we can get close to it. And so where I'd like to actually see is the WASC starting to identify, because there's such a wealth of plans and ideas out there. And this is, again, one of the areas where I want to tap into SMBRC. I'm lucky that I'm old enough to remember that SMBRC at one time, you would remember this too, but probably not a lot of other people, that there was a Biona Creek greening plan that SMBRC helped fund. I managed to get it dug up and provided it to our WASC and said, hey, this is a great idea for project ideas. Obviously, of the WIMPs and eWIMPs, a lot of those have been funded, but there's a lot of different ideas out there in different WASCs. And so I think to the extent that we can actually identify a strategic plan or a watershed plan in each of these WASCs, That, I think, would be great, even if we don't know specific projects. If we know we want a green schools, if we know we want floodplain reclamation, if we know areas where there's a lot of commercial facilities where we can do green space. Like, let's be as proactive as we can. Next slide. And then, ideally, I would love each WASC to develop a long-term investment strategy. Say, what do we want to achieve? What is our 20-year vision? How much is it going to cost? Because maybe we only have $500 million to fund over the next 20 years for, you know, $5 billion of projects. But then what can we leverage with local return, with Prop 4, if it passes, with other bond funding, with BIL and IRA? So that's moving forward in the next administration. And really develop this strategy. So next slide. So just, I've kind of mentioned some examples, but again, what I'm looking for, and this is LA River, just because I've worked on this a lot, is if you're in the upper LA River, you want to sure hit a lot of greening around Sun Valley, Pacoima, some of the industrial centers, but really you have massive water supply opportunities and the opportunity to do peak flow reduction so we could potentially green more stretches of the river. When you get to the lower LA River, which is a lot of red in the CalEnviro screen, floodplain reclamation, greening, some of the really most impacted waterways like Compton Creek, tributaries that we could be focusing on. So identifying that and then figuring out those projects. And, you know, in the the LA River, there's a Pacoima Wash Greenway. There's the River Link in Long Beach. And so just doing that through each of the WASCs. Next slide. So just very quickly, this would be a really radical change that would totally change how we do it as an investment rather than a traditional grant program. Who would change, you know, I'd be putting myself out of job on a scoring committee, but I think it could be really, really meaningful. Next slide. But there's a lot less radical approaches that I think could be very effective as well. And the first two here is what's already happening. So there's agreement that we need to do a better job of refining our metrics, our targets, our definitions. And the plan is for the WASCs to actually use the watershed plans to evaluate projects. So still we wait for applications and then say, okay, we prioritize green schools, we're not getting enough green schools. I think that's a good start. I don't think it goes far enough. I'd like to see us at least adopt watershed-specific criteria. And again, using Upper LA River, maybe water supply should be double benefits because it's so important up there, or double points. We could have each WASC develop their own call for projects. So even if we don't change scoring criteria, say, hey, we want green schools or we want floodplain reclamation, or even just setting aside funds. You know, we have $17 million a year. We're going to dedicate $5 million a year to these types of projects. So these don't get as far as my sort of radical change, but I think sort of change the dynamic. And one of my worries is if we're only doing the first two, and you go to the next slide, I don't think we fundamentally address the things that aren't working in the program. And I'm not going to go into this. Again, you'll all have access to the slides. But it kind of keeps the fundamentals of the program that I think are really not working very well largely in place. And I think we need to do another step or two further to really change the dynamic. Next slide. Actually, you can just pass this slide. Next, just really quickly, we've talked about, we are on a one-year hiatus from new infrastructure projects, so we can put more time into this watershed planning at Safe Clean Water. There's a metrics and monitoring study that is going to provide a lot of feedback on the criteria that are developed. Chair Horvath has put a lot of motions on how we can do a better, how we need to focus on, again, the metrics, nature-based solutions, some of these other areas, rolling out some of those programs. So there's a lot going on. Next slide. But what I think is important here is what can SMBRC be doing? And so the first is there's a resolution that just says, hey, include us in this watershed planning largely. We can help support that watershed planning. And the process is still a little bit of a question of what the watershed planning, but we know there's going to be at least one or two workshops in each WASC. So just make sure we, you know, we have SMBRC involved in that. I think it's really critical that key players have more individual interaction with the WASC and the watershed coordinator. So maybe it's a full half-day discussion here on watershed planning. I mean, I think this group warrants having hey, we have the chair of our WASC could come and, you know, and kind of say, hey, bring the expertise of this group into providing feedback in, you know, what are the studies out there? What are the kind of projects? What are the needs? And then lend expertise in those other areas. There's a nature-based solution, Blue Ribbon Task Force, that was the first meeting. There's County Water Plan, and Aaron over there will have a lot of the details of that. So there's ways individuals can get involved and just make our voice heard as well. You know, if we have ideas of what we want to see in the three Santa Monica Bay, let's make sure that gets up to the Regional Oversight Committee or the Board of Supervisors or district staff. Next slide. Whew, I got in 27 minutes. 7 minutes over, but sorry about that. So Q&A. Or did I overwhelm everybody?
Charlie.
Thank you for the presentation, Bruce. How can you hold people accountable when you don't even, if you adopt a radical change and don't have a formal application process?
That is a good question. I think that is one of the challenges of moving to sort of the broader changes. I think it would need some rethinking. But you know, what I would be envisioning is that the WASC would actually have sort of strategic watershed plans, and then that could be vetted by the public, that could be vetted by, you know, the Regional Oversight Committee, that could be vetted by the Board of Supervisors. That being said, two things I want to note. One is, and it was partly I was rushing through, there would absolutely need to be adaptive management built in. Like, we're not going to know everything now, and in 5 years we will have better ideas of projects and project ideas, and we'll see what's working and what isn't. So there would need to be that sort of adaptive management. The other thing, and I recognize this is a real challenge with getting to that level, is there's all sorts of regulatory hurdles and challenges, one potentially being CEQA, but also, you know, the county, and I can hear, you know, supervisor staff and Mark Pistrell in my ear, don't have land use authority. So if the WASCs are saying, hey, this is what we think needs to happen, you know, that is going to be a challenge, which is why I admit my solution, which I think would be the best overall solution, is pretty radical. But if we can get closer to that, I don't think some of the other things that I listed on that, like creating, you know, set aside funds for certain types of projects or a call for projects within each WASC that identifies more upfront, rather than waiting for what comes in and then using our watershed plans to evaluate, make it more proactive, make it more known, or even looking at potentially tweaking the scoring criteria, are things that I don't think would require that much change. I don't think that would challenge some of the, you know, the other sort of regulatory, but I think that would move us in a more proactive way than probably the direction we're going currently.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Megan.
Hi, Bruce. I'm wondering if you can or have integrated the project list that this commission already updates every year into the project list that you're developing for the watersheds.
I did not, and I don't. At the WASC meeting, there was a lengthy list of different studies that they're already looking at. I mentioned a couple that I saw was missing, but I actually don't think I did. And so that's something that we can go back to and make sure happens, particularly at Central Santa Monica Bay. Do you remember if project lists here were already included on that list?
I don't know. I can look it up, but okay. I think an important point is, are those projects related to the goals of safe, clean water, or are there other things that are on that list? Like, it would probably need to be related to, like, water quality, water supply, and those things. So it might be a sub-list, maybe.
Yeah. But we can look at that. And again, I obviously know much more about Central Santa Monica Bay than South and North. So we can work with staff here and make sure that is happening. And the timing is right now perfect for that, because this is right exactly what the consultants and the WASCs and the watershed coordinators are working on.
You may not expect this, but this is a very exciting presentation. it's encouraging discouragement. We've been watching the program trying to help our watershed coordinator. We now actually have a couple in our sphere of influence because we've grown, but want to hone in on a couple of things. So that's the first general comment, is that excellent look back and assessment of what's not working. You haven't heard from us at the RCD much because, you know, from the day this came out, the high-level macroeconomic cost-benefit analysis for a nonprofit that has to eat what it kills, it just wasn't going to work. So we've been as helpful as we can be. A couple of specifics that you brought up, one in the less radical that relates to one of the radicals.
Yeah.
Absolutely. WASC-based criteria adjustments within the legal parameters are required. We have, the North Santa Monica Bay is just completely different. It's about water quantity in the existing green infrastructure as opposed to, like, just creating new green infrastructure, right? So we have this issue now. We're already seeing multi-benefit being potentially problematic, right? If you're creating the benefit of safe, clean drinking water by taking water out of the system to do a good thing, which is clean it and drink it. The bad thing is that it's not in the system where we have existing green infrastructure and species and recreational values and all that. So so that relates to that watershed planning thing, which you put in the list of radicals, and I don't know if that's because the parameters of Measure W are such that that's a very new kind of thing, but I'd like to support that process somehow, particularly if we can get funding to, you know, be more involved. And then finally, as an executive committee member, heard a request for a resolution to start working on that. I'd like to put that up for our next agenda if we could, and perhaps get some background discussion before that so we can prepare to work on it.
Yeah, we do have a draft resolution that Bruce worked on, okay, and that our plan is to bring this to the executive committee.
Great.
And talk about it. This is the first. Go ahead, Luke, because I might be misspeaking.
I could have Caitlin share it, and if folks would like to see it, or Bruce could walk us through it, we could do that.
I'd like to first make sure that we've got all the comments. Los Angeles County.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Genevieve Osmania, I'm here as the alternate member for the Flood Control District, and really want to appreciate this discussion and thank Bruce for the presentation. And I think it's really, for me as a staff and team who does have the opportunity to work with the team who's working on a lot of the efforts that Bruce described, and we call it, you know, back at our office, the watershed planning team. There's a whole team that was created to help initiate and get this effort started. I actually started last year with a lot of the efforts and motions that were mentioned. And so just really quickly, I did want to mention that we're rounding out. Bruce is right. There's three actually scheduled workshops to go to each of all the regional WASCs and to really address and hear the feedback to develop the watershed specific criteria that will help guide and inform better, more strategic planning, like what was mentioned in Bruce's comments, and then hopefully roll up into indicators and targets and metrics regional wide to really help future rounds of the program, so that when the WASC decide and determine and deliberate what projects to fund, it will help understand if those are the right projects and help understand what success looks like and if we're meeting those targets. So we're completely definitely open to additional engagement, and I will say I will bring all this feedback back to the team, and I know that there's also additional resources that have been added to this effort, and there's definitely capacity and scope to add this commission to be an interested party and get engagement, and we can bring that team in to do a presentation or some form of a similar type of facilitated workshop to get this group's and body's feedback in addition to the feedback that they're getting from the WASC. And this will probably be a good forum to just recap and give an overview of the feedback that's being received from all the coastal watershed groups. It's the three that Bruce mentioned. It might be nice to, you know, have a sort of one-stop shop to hear a big overview of it all. So we'll definitely work with our partners to get that scheduled and the team here, and thank you for that.
Yeah, and if I can respond to the last couple comments quickly, and thanks for that. I sort of conflated when I was talking about the workshops two different sort of sets. So there's the formal WASCs, which there's going to be three workshops, although I think most have had their first. And yeah, it'd be good to make sure that this group is on the list. And it's even if we think we're going to get more public involvement, we might even have to like grow rooms. I know Central Santa Monica Bay, if even half this group showed up, even a third, we'd be like, we'd be moved out of that room. So that's something we need to think about. And when I think I said one to two is the watershed coordinators are, I think, each planning one to two more community-driven events that I think will hopefully focus on the watershed planning. And so that's another place. And then one other thing I'll mention, because there's a lot of nonprofits around the table, so folks I'm sure will be interested, although you'll be competing against us, so I shouldn't be saying anything, is the county's community engagement grants are finally rolling out, and they've got about 5 years worth of funding because it's been slow. It's running through Water Foundation. And so if anybody goes to Water Foundation's website, I'm sure you can find it, or we can get you those resources. So there's going to be an RFP. It's in process now. They're taking public comments. That's going to be issued in a month or so. And I'm hoping that funding can help provide even more community engagement around the watershed planning. That's what we're going to be applying for. I will tip what our game plan is. And then, Clark, on your comments on North Samakame and all that, and I would love to, you know, talk further with you. It probably doesn't surprise you. I might have gotten a call or two from Madeline about how different Madeline Glickfeld, North Samakame Bay is, which is, you know, very, very true. And one of the other things is North Samakame Bay is the sort of perfect microcosm, but in other places you get it more in like the sub-watershed areas where, you know, trying to get multi-benefit projects that are getting points in water supply, water quality, and community benefits, so that's nature-based, is really hard because there's some sub-areas of watershed where really, you know, you want projects that really focus predominantly on water supply, or predominantly on community greening, or water quality. And that's why I think looking at it from a watershed scale rather than a project, from a watershed scale, we should be able to get all of those done. And that's why goal setting and target setting is so important. But doing it on each project is proving really, really, really hard. So we can talk further about that, yeah.
Yeah, great. And we have one of those plans you might want to dig up to. Melina would know it because she was actually the watershed coordinator the last time we looked at North Santa Monica Bay with a state-funded watershed planning grant that established some priorities. It might be a starting point.
Okay.
It's old at this point.
Excellent. I'll make a note to follow up, and I'm also hoping the minute takers I have my team all trained to like copy anything I need to do in a separate email or I'll forget. But I will make a note now. Any other questions or comments? Did I get myself kicked off any committees with my comments?
To the contrary, Aaron Wardauer on behalf of Supervisor Horvath. Bruce, thanks a lot for this presentation and for all you do for this program and LA Waterkeeper. It's been a great partnership. And as you know, Supervisor Horvath has prioritized the work on this program a lot. And, you know, I think today's also become this Shula Kuehl Appreciation Day, and you know, honoring her legacy of championing Measure W through her time on the Board of Supervisors. I just wanted to briefly mention, there's a lot to say. You know, Jenny and her team are leading a fantastic effort at Public Works and Flood Control District to really bring this watershed planning effort to light in a way that it hasn't in the past. Where, you know, if I can editorialize a little, I think projects have been evaluated kind of as individual projects in the past based on their criteria rather than how they all fit together. And so I think that's where we're headed, as thinking about what makes the most sense and how can we be more strategic for the next 5, 10, 15 years of the program. Luke and I have talked a little bit about how to incorporate the commission, maybe the Bay Restoration and the Bay Foundation into the work of Safe Clean Water. And I want to just affirm support for what's in this resolution of more directly bringing both groups into this process and supporting that this is a good use of staff time to make sure that we are aligning efforts and ideally maximizing funding opportunities to have more impact. So thank you for this conversation today.
Excellent. And two quick things. One, I just appreciate, you know, everything that Supervisor Kuehl and everything that Horvath, Chair Horvath has been doing, her leadership has been monumental in this. And I'd also be remiss because somebody mentioned the resolution that I drafted. I would be remiss if I didn't recognize Maggie on my staff, because everything that I say that I'm doing or Waterkeeper, I do roll up my sleeves quite a bit, but there is nothing that Maggie is not my right-hand person, and she's at another meeting today, but I wish she could have been here, but she does amazing work.
Here, here. Thank you, Maggie, also.
Any other comments? Yes, Martha.
Hey, Bruce, thank you so much for the presentation. This is Martha Tremblay. Just briefly, something that I would suggest to be included in the resolution is that we clearly identify that we want the commission to be actually have a seat on the table in the WASC for the North, South, and Central Santa Monica, that it specifically identifies this commission as a stakeholder member. And I know there's a process for that, and it involves the board, an appointment from the board. So, I mean, that's something that hopefully Aaron can help with. But, you know, I think it would be important because I think what's happened in the past is I think Juan Yu was previously in the steering committee. There's a voting process, and maybe Marissa was on, but now Luke isn't on. And there's other people on for North and Central. There's actually a spot in the South Santa Monica Bay watershed group that maybe we part of our request can be that that Luke, that a representative from the commission be appointed to that group. So just a specific request would be helpful. Thanks.
So unless we have some more general comments, go right ahead. I have some specifics afterwards.
Just to kind of respond to that, when the program first kicked off, there were seats occupied by SMBRC staff. Guang Yu Chang was on there, I think, followed by Marissa. But, you know, as that kind of transitioning happened, I think, you know, SMBRC has been a little more distant and out of the process. So this is a good time to reengage, especially on this watershed planning. Also wanted to thank Bruce and LA Waterkeeper for all their involvement and thought that they're putting into how to kind of reform the program. The city actually agrees with, you know, a lot of some of the need. I don't know if we'd make as bold of a statement to say the program's not working, actually, this, you know, but I think, you know, there is a need to reevaluate how the applications are being formed. And a lot of the vetting of projects being considered by the program happens at the application stage because so many get weeded out from even being able to pass the scoring. So maybe it's more accurate to say the program could work for everybody a little more, right? So anyway, thank you for that, Bruce, and I definitely would be interested in getting the slides after possible.
Erica, I believe you have your hand raised.
I do, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Bruce and everyone, thank you for the presentation, and I appreciate the discussion. I've learned a lot in the past 20 minutes. Erica Yelensky from USEPA. I have a few different questions. Some are more process oriented. First, to make any changes, it ultimately has to be the County Board of Supervisors that approves. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
It
is that questions for Bruce?
Oh, did you want to?
Go ahead, or whoever. Sorry.
Do you remember, Bruce, on this one? I think that, is this the voters that have to change the actual composition, or can it be the board? And I don't know if anybody knows that. Some of these things actually have to go back to the voters, which is what's tricky, but this can be there's ways to accomplish this, whether it's a formal designation that there's always a seat for SMBRC, or we work to make sure that those voices are on the WASCs.
Yeah, what I would say is there is actually a chart of what can be done by staff, because there's actually a lot of authority that the staff has to change things, what needs to go to a Board of Supervisors vote, and then what needs to go back to the voters. It's actually very little that needs to go back to the voters. Even There's actually a lot more ability, I think, for staff to amend things. Now, I don't think staff loves the idea of changing things that are big without going back to the Board of Supervisors, just as a practice. But practically, I think they actually have a lot of authority. But specific issues, I would need to go back to the chart and figure out. But it's been looked at. We actually did an independent legal assessment, but it aligned with pretty much what the county, their own assessment, county council found as well. So we can work to dig that up. I'll make a note to myself.
Thank you. And then one more question. So it sounds like some applicants are being weeded out early on. Is there, I know there's the watershed coordinators. Are they able to provide technical assistance along the way with application development to help them get to the final point?
Yeah, so there was a lot of effort, and this came a lot from the NGOs, the Our Water LA Coalition, to try to make it a little easier, because it is hard on these applications for smaller entities. So that's the reason we had a technical resource program, so they actually get county funding to basically get to a level, because it could be $500,000 of expense to put an application in. The watershed coordinator is definitely one of their roles, is to help foster along projects. But the watershed coordinators have a lot on their plate. And so it's one of the reasons I'm excited about the community engagement grants going out, is we want to sort of be almost like watershed coordinators light and that augmenting, because their workload is just really, really, kind of overwhelming. And the thing that I would say that really kind of hit me is on the nonprofit side for applications, some larger national groups like TPL, Trust for Public Land, and TNC, I think, have been part of successful applications. Even they're generally in partnership, like Urban Orchard with the City of Southgate or other bigger entities. On smaller NGOs, I think the only one that's been successful is Claire with Amigos de los Rios, with some green greenways and green schools. And she's amazing. And I remember her testifying at a regional oversight committee meeting, that she's...
Bruce, I'm going to ask you to try and...
Oh, sure. She's worked on large-scale federal grants, state grants, and everything. This has been the hardest grant she's ever written, is Safe Clean Water. So we got to do something to make it more accessible to a broader range of groups.
So
thank you.
Thank you, Erica. I'm going to make a suggestion that I think this has been a very good discussion about the general program. We have a proposed resolution that Bruce put together. Given the time, and that we're going to take this up at the executive committee, unless people have some general comments about it, I would suggest that folks take a look at it and make suggested changes to Luke and Caitlin, so that we can discuss those with Bruce before the executive committee, and then have a more robust discussion at the executive committee on the wordsmithing and of the resolution itself. I've heard all sorts of general support for the idea that the commission be more involved in the watershed approach to the Measure W program, and I'd like to give people the opportunity to think about what the resolution says and propose changes or edits to that to the executive committee to have a more robust discussion about it, unless anyone disagrees at this point. Okay. So I really encourage you, I know it's we're all busy people, to take some time to look at the what Bruce has proposed, so that we can have that discussion at the executive committee and bring it back to the next governing board meeting for approval. I'm also ask staff to think about the workload associated with this, with being on an interested party and offering our expertise and what that means, and can we actually do it? But that can come back to the executive committee for their consideration. Unless there's any other comments, I would like to move on to our next item. Jenny, do you have a comment?
Oh, okay.
All right. I will say I really appreciate Bruce's effort in this. It's very difficult for us to take on a quote-unquote resolution of support or movement without someone doing the legwork to bring it together, because Luke and Caitlin are our only staff. And so as we move forward as a commission, I really encourage folks to use this as kind of the example of how we can consider changes in direction and resolutions so that we can actually have a robust discussion about it by having the background and the staff work done before it comes to us. Thank you. All right, I think we are ready. Luke, I think, or Caitlin, are you going to introduce the next item?
Yes, so thank you, Chair. The next item we have is a presentation on City of LA's Comprehensive Plastics Reduction Program. So today we'll hear from some LA sanitation staff on that program. The executive committee identified trash pollution as a priority informational item this year, and this proposed program furthers several actions of the Commission's Comprehensive Conservation and Management Plan, including Action 32, which is to reduce marine debris by participating in trash reduction programs and other efforts. The proposed citywide program aims to reduce and eliminate the input of single-use plastics through various means, and I'll turn it over to LA Sanitation staff Paul Cobian. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Okay, Assistant Division Manager and Christine Batakian, thank you, Environmental Supervisor, both with the Solid Resources Citywide Recycling Division, to provide more information on this topic.
Thank you, Caitlin, and thank you, Luke. We appreciate the invitation to come before you this morning. As Caitlin mentioned, my name is Paul Cobian, and LA Sanitation, just some quick background, we'll go to the next slide. LA Sanitation Environment, or LA San, we are the lead agency for the city's environmental programs and initiatives. LA San protects public health and the environment through the administration and management of three program areas. I believe historically, Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission has historically collaborated, engaged with two of those three programs, those being the clean water, or wastewater. We own and operate four wastewater treatment plants, the closest one being Hyperion Treatment Plant. And the Safe Clean Water Watershed Protection Program. Today, we're the lucky ones that get to fulfill the trifecta, and we represent the third program area, which is solid resources, solid waste management. Our program, we provide solid resources collection services to the entire city of Los Angeles, 4 million residents. And so LA San services 750,000 households comprised of 530,000 single-family homes and 220,000 multifamily units. So those comprising of duplexes all the way up to like four-unit buildings. The six Recycla service providers, which are franchised by the city, handle about 65,000 accounts for medium and large multifamily complexes. And so we have a big task before us when it comes to solid waste management in the city of LA. And so next slide. And so I feel I'm kind of preaching to the choir here about the plastics problem. And so I will kind of get through this fairly quickly. You know, some of the stats out there, less than 10% of plastics are being recycled. Over 6 billion metric tons of plastics are currently in the environment littered. Kind of bringing it more closer at a localized level. For California, it is the primary source of land litter. I appreciated the commenter I shared early on about the trash cleanup efforts. And it's interesting because that is the norm today, but we share in this vision of, is there a future where we're no longer doing trash cleanup efforts? And that's might be mind-blowing, but part of this program is really looking at it from that perspective. The plastics problem, it is a threat to human health and wildlife. Going back to some wonderful studies done by the UCLA Luskin Center back in 21 and 2022, they identified that it is contributing to a loss of tourism here in Los Angeles, and it is diminishing the city's aesthetics and recreation areas. You know, bringing this back in terms of what is the connection to us here in the city of LA, we do have, when it comes to solid waste management, we have goals of 95% diversion by 2035 and 100% zero waste by 2050. So I do want to achieve two things with this slide. I want to provide context of how the city arrived here, and two, really to reflect on the remarkable progress made under the City Council's leadership over the past 14 years in addressing single-use plastic issues. Council File 210064 was pivotal in catalyzing the adoption of four new ordinances focused on plastic source reduction and zero waste. This initiative has laid a robust foundation for City Council to develop and implement a comprehensive strategy to reduce reduce plastic waste across the city. And that's what here LA Sanitation has been doing for these past 2 years since we received those instructions. Next slide. And so over the past decade, City Council has enacted six groundbreaking ordinances focused on single-use plastic source reduction and zero waste. Notably, many of these measures were implemented ahead of state-level legislation, ultimately serving as a model for subsequent statewide adoption. Slide. And so I do want to point out, I think the city's success in implementing single-use plastic source reduction ordinances stems from a very proactive education-first approach that we have taken. We have been collaborating with businesses across the city. We've been educating consumers. We've effectively promoted compliance and awareness. Despite us having a very small team, we've efficiently utilized our staffing resources, engaging in person. There's two different groups, and so for our education outreach program, they've engaged with over 600 businesses citywide, meaning they've stepped into their businesses, we've informed them, we've educated them on these ordinances. And our team has actively communicated with business owners, managers, and employees about the ordinances and compliance strategies. Additionally, we've maintained a really strong presence at community events where we educate the public on reducing or eliminating their dependency on single-use plastics. To ensure inclusivity, our outreach material has already been translated into multiple languages, including Spanish, Armenian, Chinese, and Tagalog. I appreciated Tom bringing up the Reusable Food or Microgrant program. That program is administered and managed within the Comprehensive Plastics Reduction Program here within LA Sanitation. And this really is a prime example of the potential achievements when local government partners with small businesses in the city's in this particular program. This initiative not only enhanced the financial performance of food service establishments within the city by eliminating the recurring and expensive need for single-use foodware items, but it also supplied them with reusable foodware alternatives. And so consequently, it significantly reduced their daily waste output, at the same time advancing the city closer to its zero waste objectives. And we here within the city, we believe those are the win-win opportunities that we're looking for. And so we want to thank the Bay Foundation, Clean Water Action, specifically Rethink Disposable, and our partners, Georgia and Paola, just still great. And Christine here, I'm going to pass it over to her shortly. She was our project manager, working very closely with all of those partners. This program was available to all food service establishments citywide with the targeted outreach campaign in four priority communities identified there on that slide. We just concluded this pilot, and the city was able to assist and support 120 businesses in their transition to reusable foodware.
Thank you, Paul. But of course, the city's leading source reduction efforts don't conclude with, the existing ordinances that Paul has mentioned, or as well as the programs that Paul has mentioned. The city now is focused on a strategy that will comprehensively address the proliferation of plastic waste within the city. And so this strategy is really looking at comprehensively reducing plastic waste, single-use plastic waste within the city by looking at additional opportunities to encourage the use of reusable materials and items and to reduce the use of non-compostable and non-recyclable items within the city. And so prior to the city being able to move forward with this strategy, we are required by the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, to conduct the necessary environmental analysis. And really the purpose of this is to inform our decision-making body, in our case, LA City Council, as well as disclose to the public the potential environmental impacts associated with our project, and just to let them know of this before any approval decisions are made. And this sort of environmental analyses have been conducted for the six source reduction ordinances that Paul previously mentioned to varying extents. And so for the strategy that we're talking about today, the proposed comprehensive plastics reduction program, we are developing a program environmental impact report. It's one of the highest levels of environmental clearance under CEQA. And so, and we're doing this to make sure that there are no unintended consequences associated with any components of the proposed program. We initiated the development of the program EIR back in May of 2023. During this period, we had a 30-day scoping period where we solicited comments and feedback from all interested parties. And during that time, we held two public scoping meetings. Since then, in March of 2024, we published a draft environmental impact report, and we had a 45-day public comment and review period. We had quite a robust engagement campaign during that time to make sure that all interested parties were able to participate and get their feedback in. We held three public meetings at that time, and we closed a public comment at the end of April of 2024. And so now let's really get into what the proposed comprehensive plastics reduction program is. The strategy we're considering consists of two major components, an upstream component as well as a downstream component. The upstream measures are really focused on keeping plastic out of the city altogether. Measures may include bans or restrictions on certain types of single-use plastic from being manufactured or used within the city, and just overall encouraging the use of reusable materials. On the other hand, the downstream measures are focused on how the city will manage that change from plastic materials to alternate materials that may result from the proposed program. And I'd like to note that the main focus of the strategy is on single-use plastic items, or single-use items, those that are made to be thrown away. And so what exactly are we considering? We're considering over 20 upstream measures within this proposed program. They fall into four major subcategories: foodware, plastic bottles, textiles, and the other products categories. And just to tell you a little about a few of them, for instance, under the foodware measures, we have measures requiring reusable foodware for dining consumption, or some portion of takeout transactions to use returnable, reusable takeout foodware. Under the plastic bottles, there are some measures that require supermarkets to establish refill convenience zones for food, household products, personal care products, home care products, as well as a potential prohibition on single-use plastic water bottles. And then under textile measures, we have those that include reducing disposal of textiles that can be reused, or addressing the production of microplastics from repeated washing of clothes. And many of the upstream measures may have consequences downstream, and this is where these downstream measures come into play. So for instance, if we were to have a need for a requirement for reusable foodware, we might need more foodware washing facilities. And similarly, if we have a ban on single-use water bottles, you need the infrastructure. You have more reusable water bottles, so you'll need the infrastructure, such as bottle refilling stations. And so the downstream component of our proposed program looks at the development or expansion of existing facilities or infrastructure to handle compostable materials, recyclable materials, as well as hydration stations and foodware and linen washing facilities. We are currently working diligently to finalize our program environmental impact report. That final will include our responses to all comments, as well as some minor changes since the draft. And we anticipate presenting this final program EIR to the Los Angeles City Council, who will vote whether or not to certify the document in the fall. So in the coming couple of months, you'll see that on their agenda. And I'd like to emphasize here as well that the certification of the program EIR does not mean that any program elements will be implemented. It just means that we've conducted the CEQA analysis and it's been certified for potential future ordinances or city actions. And our Los Angeles City Council may choose to move forward with any one piece of the program.
Thank you, Christine. And really, just in conclusion, this isn't just a city of Los Angeles issue. Many of the coastal cities and communities have already taken actions on a lot of these single-use plastic issues many years, maybe even sometimes decades before City of LA. But I think what we want to kind of close with is that it is a regional effort. At the end of July, Board Supervisor Horvath had introduced a motion. And it's been wonderful, I think, working with LA County, going back to 2022, they had introduced a motion that an ordinance that had passed for the unincorporated areas that would essentially that banned single-use foodware for dine-in services as well as recyclable and compostable being the norm. And so the request and the ask was for the city to become aligned, and so that's what we've been working towards. And now the motion that was introduced was now for LA County to look at the body of work that we've done here within this program EIR and to identify for LA County, what are some of those places of synergy where the LA County could also maybe jump on as well. And so really, just in conclusion, our work doesn't stop here. We're looking forward to really other future potential actions to help foster and help advance a circular economy, where reuse, repair, and recycling are at the forefront. So thank you for your time, and we'll be happy to take any questions.
Do you have any questions for our presenters?
Warren Ottaveros, LA County Beaches and Harbors. This question relates to our board's support of the Comprehensive Sediment Management Plan, but also relates to recycling of glass. In the Louisiana area, they're recycling glass into sand and using it for coastal restoration. Have there been any discussions in the city of using the stream of recycled glass for conversion to a material that could be reused locally?
I will say that the market for glass, it's very circular. And so, glass bottles specifically, there's is it Wilmington? Maybe Wilmington. I think Potential Industries had the opportunity to visit. The turnaround, what's interesting, what we learned was that it's within 30 days that the recycling is literally getting back on the market shelves. I mean, that's how fast this is occurring. So we believe that when we're talking about specific like bottled glass, we are achieving what we need to achieve in terms of getting that glass back into the consumer's hand. And there's almost no degradation in the material itself. But to answer your question, we have not looked at that in terms of the Louisiana example that you gave. And I think part of it is just because the market here in California for glass is very robust.
Any other questions? Yes, Tom.
Firstly, just wanted to express my personal gratitude. on behalf of Georgia and Paula, Kendall, and the other staff that have been working on this, we've really had a fantastic time doing it. I think we all gained about 10 pounds going around and visiting these various restaurants and sitting down and talking to them over beautiful plates of food. And I see this effort from an interesting place that I know was expressed. I still have the Olympics on my mind, and yeah, having been in Paris and acknowledging that they're coming here, and I'd really love to see LA sparkle. But also that France in 2020 produced an anti-waste law for a circular economy that I think has a lot of similarities to what you folks are developing. I don't know if you pulled from it or not, but one of the comments that was made with that legislation was that they were trying to recapture something that was essentially French in their love of their culture and their dining and their food and the aesthetic experiences of living in an urban environment and a city. And they saw that as the thing that really helped propel them to make these commitments and work through some of those hard spaces. Be happy to share that information with you all. Laudable work. Glad to see it. And if we can be of any further support or help, please let us know.
Thank you, Tom.
Catherine.
Hi, just thank you, Paul and Christine, for your presentation today. Really excited to see this coming to fruition, and I appreciate all the amazing work that you and your team have done. I think the transparency and engagement from various stakeholders has been really great, so happy to see that. And going along with thinking about this, I think this is a really important issue for the commission, and I would love to see the commission writing a letter of support or a resolution to support the adoption of this final PEIR at City Council. And also going off of what Chair Bishop said, I would be happy to draft something to put forward to the commission that we could consider. I'll defer to staff about the process for that and the timing, but you know, if there's any feedback on that today, I would love to hear it, but I think this is something that we would love to see go forward, so thank you.
I appreciate the offer, since, yes.
Thank you, I'm chatty today. Paul and Christine, thank you very much for the presentation and the excellent work. I've reviewed the draft of this document, and it's really good. It's really robust. It really, a year and a half, 2 years of work that's gone into this.
Aaron, did you really review? It's 1,500 pages.
The point is that it is, the robustness of this is really something that's new, I think, for us in our sort of legislative policy, government ecosystem, to have that kind of analysis and being armed to really take on what has become, I personally think, probably the most challenging environmental issue that we're facing in our economy and that we see, of course, so pronounced on the coastline. So the confidence, and obviously the draft, we need to see the final EIR, but that was why Supervisor Horvath was keen on really digging in to see, how can we follow suit at LA County, building on that partnership that there has been between the City of LA and LA County, following leadership of many of our coastal cities that were the early adopters of many regulatory actions on single-use plastic, and encourage all of us around the table to think about where we can bring this to other audiences, to other cities, to, once this is completed, really be a roadmap for us to tackle this important challenge. So thank you so much for your work and keeping us posted on it. And I would second Kat's recommendation around supporting this through SMBRC.
Hey, I just wanted to say, on behalf of Councilwoman Park, want to thank you for the presentation, for your work on this. As the councilman for the City of Los Angeles that represents the coastal area of the city, or most of the coastal area, I should say, she speaks all the time both about reducing plastic waste, but also taking a whole watershed approach, especially ahead of storms, and how we need to be working together as a whole city to resolve this issue. So I really appreciate, you know, taking that perspective and running with it to try to address the whole issue and not just constantly trying to catch up. So thank you so much. And within the council office, we're very much looking forward to engaging with you about how this all can move forward. So thank you so much.
Erica's hand is raised.
Erica, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Erica Jelensky with USEPA. Thank you so much for your presentation. And I'm really glad to hear all of the enthusiasm for this around the table. And I was able to dine at one of the restaurants participating in the program in May, and that was such a great experience, and got to meet with some of your staff and was there with Tom and Georgia and Paula. So excited to see this grow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for our presenters? Thank you so much for coming. So I don't believe we have a closed session. Okay. At this point, this is an opportunity for members to comment on anything that was not on the agenda.
Since we got 24 minutes, I figured let's use it. Wouldn't want to get out of here early.
So you've got 23 minutes. Please set the timer.
I just wanted to update regarding our whale on Saturday. It was kind of a big deal, and I figured a lot of the players in this room would want information. It was Saturday afternoon around 5:30 in the afternoon. We witnessed a 50-plus foot fin whale swimming in the surf at Torrance Beach. We started a response. We contacted the Marine Mammal Care Center. Marine Mammal Care Center was a great partner on this one in that they handled the West Coast Stranding Network notifications. They followed up with the National Marine Fisheries Service. The whale did come up into the surf line. It was clearly sick. We had a crowd of a couple hundred people who were extremely upset that we weren't saving this whale's life. Big media interest. The Department of Beaches and Harbors came out with some of their personnel, brought out their public information officer. We had fire department PIOs. Ultimately, it was the Marine Mammal Care Center's PIOs that really kind of handled it and diffused the crowd by making public addresses using the lifeguards PA system, talking to the media, and essentially explaining that this whale is dying. It came here because it's dying. It's not dying because it's here, but it's here because it's dying, and that the best thing that we were going to do was give it space, give it peace, give it dignity, and if it was still dying in the morning, work on finding a humane way to end its suffering. And that kind of changed the demeanor of the crowd. They were less angry and violent and more just sad. The incident continued overnight. We had a presence on the beach. I broke up a fight at 1:30 in the morning between some young intoxicated men who wanted to take pictures on the whale and a very committed UC Merced marine biology major who was trying to keep the guys away from it. So it was an all-night effort. In the morning, it was very much deceased. It had died about 7:30 or 8 p.m. And so in the morning, the Department of Beaches and Harbors was absolutely fantastic in lending us some resources. Not necessarily lending us. I mean, the whale was on the beach, so it was really kind of, it was their problem. But this event is so rare, but there's a lot to learn from it for all of our agencies and partners and cities that getting these entities involved early is great. Understanding that ultimately it is the, once the National Marine Fisheries Service is done with it, the carcass belongs to whoever the landowner is. So if it's on private property, it's their problem to deal with. If it's in the city of Santa Monica on the beach, it's going to be the city's problem to deal with. If it's on a beach operated by the County of Los Angeles, it's going to be LA County Beaches and Harbors' problem to deal with. And we're all going to work together to try to make that problem go away. And this was a great partnership and a really good way to make it happen. We brought out, well, we didn't. National Marine Fisheries Service sent out a number of teams to do a necropsy. They looked at the whale, watched it rolling, and said, this is too dangerous, beaches and harbors. Helped stabilize it by hooking tractors up to it and kind of pulling it into a more stable place, not necessarily out of the water, but into an area where they could do the full necropsies. They got tremendous data on it. Dr. Deming from the Pacific Marine Mammal Center in Laguna said this was like a unique opportunity. They haven't had a whale come up and die like this that they can get information from. The only times they get the fresh ones are the ship strikes, and those tend to just fall off the ship, drop into deep water, and then float once they're bloated. And at that point, the necropsy just gives you soup. This time they were able to get like actual tissues and a ton of that. They also were able to cut really big holes in the carcass so that when we were able to tow it off the beach, we had one of the rescue boats attached to it, pull it off. We had one of the loaders from Beaches and Harbors pushing on one end. We were able to get it off the beach. 2 hours of towing got it 2.7 miles out. And when the rescue boat captain called and said that his boat was really struggling and they were actually taking damage on the boat, they weren't going to make it the full 40 miles that National Marine Fisheries Service wanted them to go. I told him to just steer for the canyon. And he did. He got it into about 530 feet of water. And at that point, they had to cut it loose. He said it was essentially just dangling straight below the boat. It was 51 foot of fin whale, and they were doing about 1.5 knots to, you know, trying to inch towards the canyon. They did cut it, and so it's now 530 feet down, we hope. We're crossing our fingers that it stays there. In the past, when they don't have the holes in them cut through the abdominal walls, they will bloat as they decay on the inside and gas up. So we'll find out in a few weeks if this was a really good, successful operation, but so far it's looking that way. We're going to get a lot of good information from it. It was sad. It was tragic. It was a great opportunity for a lot of agencies to work together. And hopefully there's a lot that can be learned from this event. That's all I got.
Thank you. Any other comments from members? Seeing none, I'll remind you that we have an executive committee meeting on September 19th at 1 p.m. at the Edward C. Little Water Recycling Facility. And the next governing board meeting will be in person here on October 10th at 9:30 a.m. And I'd like to adjourn the meeting.